It's time to go deep for the exclusive info you need on the hockey team you love. This is Preds Insiders with your host, Robbie Stanley.
Brought to you by Dr. Kelly Rice.
On your flagship home of the Predators Radio Network, Smashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
1025.
Hey, welcome into Preds Insiders here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Brought to you by Dr. Kelly Rice. For all your dental or sleep apnea needs, visit KellyERice.com. Robbie Stanley here with you as always. Not a very good weekend for the Predators in terms of the on-ice results. They lose 6-2 to Tampa Bay. They lose 5-4 in overtime to Minnesota last night at Bridgestone Arena. So one of a possible 4 points collected. But the magic number to make the playoffs now down to 2. Vegas chokes away a game last night in a shootout to San Jose. The Sharks tied the game with less than a second remaining in regulation and then forced the overtime period and ultimately won in a shootout against Vegas. So Preds still 4 points up on Vegas with 3 games left in the regular season, and Predators could clinch the playoffs as soon as tomorrow against the Calgary Flames. We had a conversation earlier this morning. We got a lot to get to in the show, by the way. Got Jeremy K. Gover coming up. We'll get his thoughts on a potential first-round opponent against either Colorado or the Calgary Flames, who the Predators will see tomorrow at Bridgestone Arena. Darren McFarland will offer his thoughts later in the show as well on the weekend that was for the Predators. But there's an interesting trend going on right now for the Predators, and it's not a good one in terms of a very important line over the course of the past year that has dropped off the table offensively. We talked about that this morning on Robbie and Rex Road and more. Here was that conversation from earlier this morning.
Look, Minnesota has been playing really well. The Predators have matched up well against them all season long. But, I mean, you had basically a Minnesota team out there last night that were missing a lot of key guys. I mean, Zuccarello wasn't playing. Greenway wasn't playing. Dumba wasn't playing. Foligno wasn't playing. Spurgeon got hurt in the game. I mean, that's a depleted Minnesota group out there last night, and they basically took it to you the whole game. Now, credit to the Predators for finding a way to, you know, to dig a point out of that, because I thought, you know, that was a game where Minnesota was the better team really from start to finish, and the Predators found a way to get a point out of it. So good for them for battling back and to be able to do that. But, you know, to Adam's point there, you know, that's a Minnesota team that were missing a lot of key guys, and they were by far, I thought, the better team last night.
Yeah, again, I thought especially, I mean, the second period, it was just like, oh my gosh, Riddick, head on a swivel, buddy, as Terry Crisp likes to say. They were just better. Think about last time they played. Minnesota did not make the same tactical mistake of let's go in and just start punching people and make a statement. You know, last time they played, they did that, and they, I don't know if that had an impact, but the Preds gladly accepted the challenge and then beat them, and again showed like, wow, this is a good matchup for the Preds. Didn't look like a good matchup last night. I have seen some I just don't think good teams right now, really good teams, are a good matchup with the way the Preds are playing. I just don't think they're playing well enough. I did see, and I saw Alex Doherty tweeted about this, and there was a little bit of talk to you know, around press row, the goalie decision, should John Hines have flip-flopped it? You know, you go Riddick against Tampa Bay and, you know, Saros against the Wild. I understand, like, that's an easy one, I think, in retrospect. And again, speaking of Terry Crisp, he has said it before, right? Hey, if there's a game that you have a better chance of winning, take your best guy for that one. But the thing is, you know, Saros had that rest, and you want him in that Tampa Bay game. You want to go win the Tampa Bay game. I think it would have been weird. And what are you saying too, if you do that, if you flip flop that, have all that rest and say, all right, and Riddick's the guy here in the first game of the weekend. I disagree. I mean, it's easy to say right now, but I think you go with Saros as much as you can. And following up on that, I don't think that you go with him yesterday, even though he had a short day of work. The blast back-to-back with him did not work out. Not that it was mostly on him.
Well, but and to that point, though, I think now he plays Saturday, he's rested until Tuesday. And look, let's say things don't go well for the Predators this week and that Arizona game means something. Saros is going to play Colorado, and he's going to play Arizona. Like, he's playing back-to-back if he has to. this week, because, I mean, you can't go down. I understand the argument of the backup goaltenders, but when it's potentially the last game of the season with a chance to get in the playoffs, and if you're the Predators, you're hoping it doesn't come down to that this week, but it still could. He's getting both of those if he needs to get both of those. So getting him the rest yesterday also kind of plays into that as well.
Yeah, for sure. And now again, so, okay, you could still have enough rest. You could have Monday off and play, but yeah. I mean, if you're Hines, you had to look at this, like, if need be, this last week, it's all Saros. So you know you're not going to use him for both of these games. I think you know, he has that rest. You use him in the Tampa Bay game. It didn't go well. It's easy to say now, well, they would have put a touchdown on anybody. They're putting a touchdown on everybody they play. Well, okay, but go with your best. Again, I think Riddick, now he gave up some juicy rebounds yesterday.
He did.
At times, you know, but
got a lot of help from the post too, but yeah.
I'm not saying he was great, but you know what? He hung in there and he gave him a chance. And I was really looking forward to the Fiala-Riddick showdown in the shootout before the Preds, by the way, screwed that up.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's a couple seconds left.
Just run the clock out, man.
Yeah, it's okay to try. I believe it was Yossi who should have hung back, right? I think that's correct. So that's tough to lose like that.
Definitely tough to lose like that. And there's a disturbing kind of a trend that's going on right now that I think has gone maybe a little too much under the radar. And Will in Bellevue on the text line starts to point this out. Gutsy 1 point, but disturbing trend. 7 penalties, 41% on faceoffs, double the giveaways, half the shots, only 4 goal scorers. We're better than that. Let's beat Calgary and finish this. This is coming from Will from Bellevue. I was looking around last night because I was wondering to myself, when is the last time that the Herd line did anything offensively? Tanner Jeannot now has 0 points in his last 9 games. Trennan, 0 points in his last 12 games. And Colton Sisson, 0 points in his last 17 games. So you're talking about double-digit games for 2 of the 3, and you're approaching all 3 of them, where they've not had a point on the board. That cannot happen, especially when it's, and I get it, we're talking about the third line. This has been way more important of a third line for the Predators than most teams throughout the league. But especially when you factor in that you're getting nothing from Elli Tolvanen, who I thought was just totally invisible last night and didn't play on Saturday against Tampa Bay. It's time to be, in my mind, pretty concerned about Elli Tolvanen. You're not getting anything from Luke Cunningham. You can't not get anything from those guys and then also not get anything from the third line offensively either. Basically, 4 guys are scoring goals right now. It's Matt Duchene, Philip Forsberg, Ryan Johansson, and Roman Yossi. And you'll have others sprinkled in there. Fabro got a big one last night. But it's basically those 4 guys offensively right now, and that's not going to get it done.
Yeah, I mean, those numbers are – again, those numbers to me tell the story of, you know, a collective that isn't getting it done. And I know that those guys have a lot more of a role than just scoring and producing. And look, last night I'm watching Tanner Jeannot just throw guys. I mean, he launches a guy, you know, halfway across the ice into his own goal. I mean, he's out there doing his thing, but those numbers are really interesting. And I think telling him, I wonder if the coaching staff is toying around with anything there. Maybe the whole idea of see what Jeannot can do up with a Johansson, perhaps. But one way or the other, you know, they've got to do more than that.
Well, I understand that line, their primary responsibility is not to score goals. I get that. It's to be physical. It's to set the tone. It's to play well defensively against other teams' top lines. And it's to, you know, really kind of establish the forecheck and the identity of the group. I get all that. But you can't have nothing. Like, you can't be nothing offensively out there. And you're talking about a pretty big sample size. I mean, 12 games for Trennan with no points, 17 for Sissons with no points, 9 with Jeannot for no points. I mean, you can't have that. I mean, if that's going to be what it is, you just don't have a chance in the playoffs because you have to have some balanced scoring to some degree. And, I mean, you know, Forsberg scores last night. Duchesne, I think, continuing to play really well. I think Ryan Johansson continuing to play really well, even though I didn't think Tomasino or Tolvanen, either one of them, were very good last night along with him. But right now, I mean, it's just totally dried up other than those four guys.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, Trenin, you know, he was a 17-goal guy. I mean, I thought Trenin was, you know, had a real chance to get to 20 goals, you know, this year. So it's not like those guys haven't, you know, had their moments. I mean, Sissons, you know, I mean, you expect some level of production to go along with, like you said. I mean, they are the tone setters for this team. I'd be really interested to know in that stretch, you know, as John Hines evaluates things, like, does he feel like they're doing all the other things at the same level? Because it seems like when they do what they do at the highest level, that inevitably leads to some production.
Yeah.
If you're really getting the forecheck established, that's where you can score off that, and they do.
Coming up next, we'll be joined by Jeremy K. Gover. We'll get his thoughts on the Predators as they potentially face either the Avalanche or the Flames in the first round of the playoffs. Odds still in favor of Preds making the playoffs, and if they do, it's going to be one of those two opponents. We'll get Jeremy's thoughts coming up next. You're listening to Preds Insiders here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Preds Insiders, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley here, as always, and we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in friend of the program and friend of Robbie Stanley, Jeremy K. Gover. Jeremy, what's going on, brother? How we doing?
Robbie, how are you, sir?
I'm great. I appreciate you taking time to join us tonight. Lots to get to with the Predators in their final week of the regular season as they make a push toward the playoffs. And, Jeremy, let's just start with the weekend that was not a great weekend for the Predators in terms of the results. They end up with one out of a possible 4 points. They got hammered by Tampa Bay on Saturday. Tough loss yesterday in overtime with a little bit more than a second remaining against the Minnesota Wild. But San Jose comes back last night to beat Vegas. Vegas chokes one away against the Sharks, and the Sharks win in a shootout. So still in decent position heading into this final stretch in terms of making the playoffs. I'm curious, what did you think of the weekend for the Predators as a whole, and what do you make of how they're playing as they sit here today, entering into the final week of the regular season?
It's very hard to conceive that Roman Josi is having a career season. Matt Duchesne is having a career season. Philip Forsberg is having a career season. Ryan Johansson is having the season that he's always been meant to have, right? Like, these are the seasons he's supposed to put up consistently, right?
Yep.
Mikael Granlund is in that 60-point ballpark, which is where he should be. And yet, the Predators are flirting with... No, I didn't even mention, sorry. And Tanner Janot is flirting with the all-time rookie Preds goal-scoring record. So you've got all these things happening individually. But as a team, they are flirting with the fact that they might not make the playoffs. Now, obviously, the overwhelming odds, of course, is that they're going to, right? But I'm just saying that, like, that's a crazy thing to think about. And so it's troubling, I think. If you'd asked me 2 months ago, which I think you did, actually, on the show, I was like, no, they're going to make it. They might even make the second or third spot in the Central. And, you know, look at all these wonderful seasons these players are having. But I don't know if UC Soros has hit a wall. I'm not saying it's his fault. I mean, don't get me wrong. But I'm just saying, like, you know, like there was a lot of talk, right? Robbie, coming into the season, you and I talked about it on these very airwaves, on this very show. I've mentioned it on several other radio programs up in Milwaukee, et cetera. And you've talked about it with Rex Road as well, ad nauseum, I'm sure, that UC Soros, coming into this season, has never played more than 40 games of North American pro hockey, AHL or NHL.
Yep.
And now he's played 66. And we're starting to see, I think, a little bit of fatigue set in. Nothing that can't be fixed, and maybe the playoffs provide you with that spark that, you know, you just find that extra something, you know, the heroes are made of, and you go out and you just go kill it and you get that confidence back. But I do think that there's a little bit of worrisome there in the goaltending department. And this goes all the way back to October, when I made no secret about how I was not a fan of the David Rittich signing. And I, you know, I thought they should have went after a little bit of better goaltender, maybe an Antti Raanta, something like that, just based on the fact that Saros had never played more than 40 pro games in North American ice hockey, and so therefore they needed a more of a backup they could kind of count on if they needed to. Now, Riddick has been fine, and actually I disagree with your callers this morning, by the way. I think there was a texture that came in that said something about how, you know, big save day wasn't a very big save at all,
yeah.
You know, last night. I actually don't agree with that. I thought he kept them in the game for the most part on several different occasions. And so I thought he played well last night. But I think overall, he leaves a lot to be desired, right? And you're really giving the you're letting Saros carry the water, which is fine. You should. But there was still that question mark about can he do it for a full season, and I hate to doubt him because that 263 goals against average should be good enough to beat anybody. But the way the Preds are playing right now without any depth scoring, it looks bleak.
Well, and to that point, I mean, I think, and we'll get to the playoff matchups itself here in just a few minutes, but like if the Predators are going to be successful in the playoffs, if they're going to take down a Colorado or a Calgary, or take down, I mean, just have a chance to hang in there with those teams. Like it's going to require Saros to be great. Like he's got to play great in the playoffs in order for that to happen. And I do wonder, like you mentioned, Jeremy, 66 games that he's played to this point. I mean, you can look at that Tampa game the other night and there were breakdowns left and right where I don't know that you necessarily blame UC Saros for those goals, but I would also argue that, you know, prime level UC Saros, top level UC Saros, maybe makes another save or two in that game and keeps you in that game a little bit longer. So his numbers have been average since the All-Star break, and that's a concern to me coming down the stretch here because I wonder, we know that he can do it. My question is, can he get back to that level at this point this year, or is he run into the ground enough to the point where maybe that's not realistic this time of year? I don't know.
Yeah, it's a tough one. There's nobody, well, maybe other than Pecorino, that's a bigger UC Saros fan than I am. And I say that because I followed this guy from his draft year. I mean, I was at the draft when he was drafted 99th overall in 2013. And I remember everybody, I mean, all the experts were saying if he was 2 inches taller, he's a first-round pick. And I thought, man, what a great steal this is for yet another late round steal for the Preds scouting department, right? And he has been. He's been tremendous. But that's, I mean, I just put that together just to say that I've been following this guy since he was drafted. And so I want him to do well. Plus, of course, you know, he's humble. I always love humble athletes and, you know, and he got it all Pecorino and all that. So it's all a great storybook. But I do wonder, because I try to keep it real, as you know, Robbie, and try to keep it fair. I do wonder if he has hit some sort of proverbial wall, you know, that, and I'm not saying that next year he won't be any better. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that he's, when you go 66 games for the first time in your career and you're the guy for the first time in your North American career, at least, that's a lot of work.
Oh yeah.
You know, and so you have to be conditioned to do that. I think it's very rare that we see a rookie goaltender come out of nowhere and put up, you know, let's say 60 games, and they go into the playoffs and they go on some magical run. It is extremely rare for that to happen. So I think the Predators they are definitely capable of winning for a first round series, whoever it is, Colorado or Calgary. They can win. Do I think they will? I need to see more. And I think and a lot of that comes from the bottom six. A lot of that comes from the net. A lot of that comes from just defensive play all around. I think the Predators and maybe not consciously, but they're looking at all these wonderful seasons that all these individual players are having, and they're like, guys, we can go put it out there and just, like, we can score goals. And I think that might be lending itself to maybe a lack of attention to detail in their own end with these kind of home run breakout pass attempts that get picked off, or, you know, I'm going to try this cute play in the neutral zone. It's going to go the other way. Like things like that, like those little things like that end up becoming big things, of course. But those little things, I think, all stem from the fact that they look up and down the score sheet and they're like, who is not having a good year other than Elli Tolvanen? I mean, everybody on this list is killing it, but for some reason, the team aspect, it's just falling apart.
Jeremy K. Gover on with us here on Preds Insider. So, Jeremy, obviously, if the Preds make the playoffs, which, as you pointed out, the odds are overwhelmingly in the favorite that they would, barring a collapse this week. It's going to be Colorado or it's going to be Calgary. And look, I mean, both teams obviously are very good. Most Predators fans want to avoid Colorado at all costs. I understand it. If I had to choose, I would probably rather see the Predators play Calgary than Colorado. However, I think I'm probably in the camp where I don't think it's as big of a difference as most people do. How do you view the potential matchups for the Predators, be it Colorado and Calgary?
So I've said this numerous times, and I will say it again. I think Calgary is a pretender. I don't think they're a true contending team. Now, of course, I say that, they'll probably go out and win the cup. But, but I just don't like how they're made up. I think their goaltending is inflated. I just don't. They've got a lot of talented players, sure. But I think they don't have a solid bottom six to let me rephrase that. If their opponent in the playoffs concentrates on their top line, maybe top six, then they're beatable.
Yeah.
That's, I guess, what I mean, right? So whereas Colorado, they've gotten deeper. Yes, of course, they've got Rantanen and McKinnon and all these other guys that I can name, right? But they've gotten deeper. Their bottom six now has guys that can score in it. And so they're more of a threat to roll lines as opposed to Calgary, in my opinion. So I would like to see Calgary. I'd like to see the Preds play Calgary, of course. But at the same time, I think I agree with what you're saying, where I don't think it matters as much. But here's why I say that. Because I think they are a tremendous underdog either way.
Yep.
And again, that doesn't mean they can't win. They've got guys, absolutely, that can step up. If the Herd line, for the first time in probably, 3 weeks, kind of finds its mojo again, then this is a totally different conversation. And I don't mean to put it all on one line, but what I mean by that is the same thing, the same rationale for Calgary, right, that I have for Calgary. If the opponent, let's say the Calgary defense, goes after and shuts down, we're going to shut down Forsberg and Duchesne. Okay, well then they've got Johansson and Granlund they can throw out there. Okay, well then let's say their second pair, which is also not terrible, let's say they shut them down. Okay, well now what do you have left? You got a Herd line that should be able to go out and muck it up and score goals, and they're not doing that. And so then you've got Cousins and Cunning and a bunch of guys that are underperforming. So to me, it all comes down to, unfortunately, because the Herd line, no pressure. It comes down to the Herd line. If they can get that mojo back, the Predators can be dangerous. If they can't, I think it's going to be a quick series.
Well, to that point, no points for Janot in his last 9, no points for Trennan in his last 12, and no points for Sissons in his last 17. So offensively, they're struggling to find it right now. I think the other thing, Jeremy, too, that, obviously I give the edge to Colorado is the blue line, but not just the blue line in terms of, I think Colorado has a better decor, because I do. I think they have a more dynamic decor. Like, I think Calgary's got a lot of good defensemen. I don't think they have any defensemen that scare you. Whereas Colorado, you've got obviously Cale Makar, but you've got, Devontaes, you've got Sammy Girard back there as well. Like, I think there's way more to contend with Colorado on the back end. And to me, I think that's the big separator. Like, forward-wise, I don't think there's that big of a difference. There is a difference, but I don't think there's that big of a difference. The defensemen and how dynamic they are, that's what separates it for me.
I agree with that, because even Bowen Byram is he's a tremendous work in progress, right? So, I agree with that. I think the defense for Colorado is far superior than Calgary, for sure. And I think that's one of the reasons why I give Calgary the edge. One, again, I think they're a pretender. But two, because I think their defense is exposable. Is that the right word? I think the Predators can attack that and be okay, as long as they can keep their wits about them against a guy like Tkachuk, who's going to be out on the ice. Basically serving the Corey Perry 2.0 rule, right? So he's going to be playing that role, and if the Predators can not do anything stupid, then I think that, again, they have a shot. I am picking Calgary to win this series, but I'm picking them to win it in like 6 or 7, because I do think Nashville has a legitimate shot to win the series. I really do. But it all comes down to, can they get depth scoring? This team, Robbie, you and I have covered this team forever. You know that there was a time where the stars were not playing as stars.
Oh, yeah.
And the depth scoring was what was keeping this team afloat, right? These guys like Jaron Smithson would chip in. You're like, wait, what? So this is a time where they actually need that to happen. So the stars are playing as stars right now, for sure. Will that go in the playoffs? We'll see. It's always, again, that The intensity gets ratcheted up, the intensity detail gets ratcheted up, and you tend to focus on the star players. So you can kind of shut them down, take your chances against the lower-level guys. If the lower-level guys can step up and make a dent, then I think they have a chance to beat anybody, honestly.
Jeremy, last thing for you here. As we look at this, and coupled with that, the penalties have been a problem all year long for the Predators, and that's nothing new. I think we've talked about that before here on the show. There is the theory out there that the whistles get swallowed a little bit more in the playoffs, which I think they do, which I thought last night was horribly officiated, but that's a story for another day.
Yes.
How big of an issue do you think the penalties, specifically the minor penalties and the stick infractions, can be for this Predators team as they head into a playoff series against Colorado or Calgary? With the penalty kill lately, the numbers are reeling a little bit.
So for context, for everybody listening, the Predators have taken 984 penalty minutes this year. That is 101 penalty minutes more than the next guy. That's a ton.
That's incredible.
Okay. They lead the league by 101 penalty minutes. It's not like, 20 and okay. No, it's a lot. And then you compare that to their two opponents would be. So you have Calgary, okay, who is 15th in the league with 702. And you have Colorado, who's 18th in the league with 692. So they're basically in the same region, right, within 10 points, right?
Yeah.
So you've got, without 10 points, 10 penalty minutes. So, but they both have agitators. Again, I mentioned Tkachuk before. They got Nazem Kadri in Colorado who might do something dumb. You never really know. Right, so they've got all that stuff going for them. But they seem to be, even with those guys, they seem to kind of have it under control. Whereas the Predators are more of a, we're going to intimidate the crap out of you. We're going to take a lot of penalties. At least you hope it's the intimidate part. You want it to be the intimidate part. You don't want it to be like, oh, just give them time. They'll do something stupid. And I think that's the biggest concern right now with the Predators, even more so, I think, than the depth players that I mentioned earlier. If they can stay out of the box, and we've heard it 1,000 times, Pete Weber and Jay Moore on 102.5, the pregame show, they said the key to the game last night was to stay out of the box.
Yep.
And what did they do? They took two penalties in the first 10 minutes. And then you had Alex Carrier on the bench with Kara Hammer on the broadcast, on the TV broadcast, and she said, what do you guys need to do? And he's right, we need to stay out of the box. You need to stop taking penalties. So there, it's being said, but for some reason, nobody's listening. And I think that's the biggest concern going into the playoffs. Because, again, this team is talented enough to win. But if they put themselves behind the eight ball in every game, I mean, come on. It's going to be dead on arrival. And I don't ever want to say that. But that's if they can't stay out of the box, that's what it's going to be.
Jeremy K. Gover, our guest here on Preds Insiders, friend of the show, longtime reporter for the Nashville Predators. Jeremy, great stuff as always. Appreciate you taking time to be with us tonight.
Hey, man, I really appreciate you having me, and I hope you have a wonderful week, and I hope that we will see you at the rink next
week. Very well done. Very nicely done. We'll come back. We'll take your thoughts on the Predators, 615-737-1025 on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. This is Preds Insiders here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Preds Insiders, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Dr. Kelly Rice. For all your dental or sleep apnea needs, visit KellyERice.com. Robbie Stanley here with you, as always. Thanks to Jeremy K. Gover for joining us in the last segment. We'll be joined by Darren McFarland of Darren Donica Chase, coming up here in just a few minutes, get his thoughts on the weekend that was for the Predators. Lots of conversation about the goaltending decisions from John Hines as of late. Obviously, UC Saros getting the start on Saturday against Tampa Bay did not go well for UC Saros and the Predators. Now, having said that, Tampa Bay has scored 8 goals against Toronto last week, 6 goals against the Predators, and then last night scored another 8 goals against the Florida Panthers. So you're talking about, 22 goals in 3 games scored by the defending champions, the 2-time defending Stanley Cup champions. So it's not just the Predators where things have gone poorly against the Lightning lately, but nonetheless, 6 goals allowed against Tampa Bay. UC Saros pulled in the first couple of minutes of the third period. I thought there was a chance that they might start him against Minnesota last night, but David Rittich gets the call. And look, you give up 5 goals, so everybody's going to look at the goalie. I thought Rittich played well for the most part. I mean, there's probably a goal here and there that you could look at that maybe if UC Saros is in and at top-level form, he makes the save on. But I thought for the most part, Rittich was pretty good. First off, the officiating last night's game, and I talked about this morning on Robbie and Rex Road, the officiating was god-awful last night. And, I've given up trying to figure out what goaltender interference is, because it's such a crapshoot when these things go to review nowadays. But the goaltender interference play last night, where Middleton basically just falls into David Riddick, was so ridiculous. I mean, it was clearly goaltender interference. He falls down into the goalie. Does Luke Cunning's stick make contact with his skates? Yeah, it does, after he falls into the goalie. So it has nothing to do with the play. And for the officials to go back and look at that and to come back and say that the Nashville player caused the contact and caused the interference is just absurd. Like, I see the video. I see the guy falling down. And not only is he falling down, he's falling out without being touched, driving to the net. It was just an absurd call. You know, beyond that, because the Predators, you know, you give up the goal, which I don't think should have counted. So obviously that hurts you more than anything. I thought, to their credit, they did a good job of killing off the 5-on-3 penalty right after that. But I just thought there were some calls in the game last night on both sides that were just really bad. I mean, Delorier got called for a cross check in front of the net that I thought, I can't remember honestly at this point if it was Matt Benning or Nick Cousins. That was a pretty good dive by whoever it was on that play. And I just thought there were some ticky-tack calls, like Luke Cunning got called for holding. I didn't think that was a holding penalty. I mean, there was just a whole bunch of crap going on last night. So bad job by the officials. I thought it was an extremely poorly officiated game last night, and I hope that trend does not continue in the playoffs. But it's just one of those things where it's got to be better than that in that situation. But I digress. We'll go off on the refs again at another time. You know, I thought it sets up Saros now to where if all three games matter this week, and if for the Predators, you're hoping that they don't. You hope that you not only make the playoffs, but maybe that you can clinch the first wild card spot before that game against Arizona as well. Then maybe if you can't do that, Saros is going to have to play all three. You've got Calgary tomorrow, Colorado Thursday, and then the back-to-back with Arizona. You're hoping that the Arizona game doesn't matter, but that's requiring, you know, a big game on Tuesday night between Dallas and Vegas. If Vegas wins that game, it could get pretty interesting in terms of making the playoffs. Because, look, I know the Predators played really well against Calgary last week, and Colorado struggled. Those are two teams that are obviously very, very good and extremely talented teams. So if you're the Predators, I'm going to be interested to see how they respond, because we talked about this a little bit with Jeremy. If they play the way they played the last month, it doesn't really, to me, matter who the matchup is. It's not going to go well. Like, there's got to be a different level that this Predators team reaches that we've seen them reach earlier this year. And I'm not talking about Forsberg and Duchene and Yossi and those guys, because for the most part, they've been at the same level all year. But the Herdline's been much better earlier in the year than they are right now. Saros, I think, has been better in the year earlier than he is right now. The defense, at times, was better than it's been as of late. So there's a whole lot to improve and a whole lot to work on this week if you're John Hines. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Darren McFarland of Darren Donica Chase. We'll get his thoughts on the Predators and where they stand heading into the last week of the regular season. This is Preds Insiders here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Preds Insiders, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We caught up earlier this morning with Darren McFarland from Darren Donica Chase to get his thoughts on the Predators as they enter the final week of the regular season, including some struggles for the Herdline as of late. Here was that conversation this morning on Robbie and Rex Road with Darren McFarland.
So, Darren, the results, not great for the Predators this weekend. They got hammered in Tampa Bay, which, by the way, how about the Lightning? They look pretty good lately.
You know, it's funny. I was saying last week, I'm not sure they're the same Tampa team and just won two cups. And they've got out and scored 40 goals in like three games. I'm like, oh, well, maybe they are the same Tampa team. My bad, Lightning. My bad.
They are pretty darn good. So you lose 6-2 Saturday. And, you know, it's 5-4 loss in overtime last night. I thought Minnesota was the better team, but you end up getting a point out of it if you're the Predators. And Vegas chokes one away last night. So you're still in pretty good shape, but I got to be honest, Darren, I don't really like the way the Predators are playing right now as they head into the final stretch of the regular season.
Well, I mean, certainly everybody could, you know, understand why you feel that way. They've gone 5-5-2 this month after a 9-5 month in March. And, you know, it's not going the direct, you know, you're supposed to be playing a certain way. And, you know, I don't know. I don't know what the conversations are in Denver. You know, they're not playing a certain way. Minnesota and St. Louis are. They're blazing hot. Edmonton was blazing hot until last night, and they lost. I mean, there's just a lot. Yeah, I mean, they're not playing the style that you know, we were praising for a good bulk of the season. They're just not – they're not getting the production from certain lines, from certain players. You know, I don't really look at the penalty kill as a problem. It's just – it seems like the problem they've had all season in staying out of the box that has persisted them the entire year has just finally caught up to them, and they're playing teams that are really good. Although Minnesota was not particularly good stats-wise on the power play. I think they came into the game last night 18th in the league with the man advantage, but they've been red hot of late. I think last night's two power play goals, they had five power play goals in the last two games. St. Louis, second best power play unit in the league, and they burned them. Edmonton was the fourth best power play unit in the league. Tampa is very good with the man advantage. Man, their passing is just so impressive to watch, isn't it? I mean, I don't really want to praise them too much because of what they did on Saturday, and they've won the cup twice, 2 years in a row. I'm jealous of all that, but man, gosh, if you just like step back and watch how they play, it's impressive. And I know a lot of them have been together for a long time, so that explains it. But to your question, Robbie, I mean, everybody has the right to feel that way because, you know, the Calgary game was a nice response on Tuesday night. They'll get them again tomorrow night. But, you know, just the third line that we've praised all season, that production, that well has dried up some. I mean, the same usual suspects that we've talked about with Cunningham and Tolvanen, and you guys know how I felt about that. I've put out my suggestions of what they should do with a little bit of a line shuffle. Nobody's listened to me, that's apparent, and that's fine. I'm not the coach, and they know more than me, but I've seen this coming for a good while, and nothing's really changed on that front, so I guess I'm not sure what would change on the results front, right? I mean, they've been getting production from Duchesne and Forsberg and Johansson all year, and Yossi. Nothing's changed there. They had to get it from other places, and currently they're just not getting that.
Well, and you have been. That's the thing, Darren. I mean, I've come completely – I've come around on the whole Janot thing, especially you know, Robbie had the stats that we've said a couple times on the show of all three of those guys individually. They're all in long droughts in terms of producing points at all. That line serves other functions, but when this team was playing its best, that line was also producing offense without question. So – do you think – we know how you feel about it, and I think I agree that although it's like this last week, and so like how much shuffling do you want to do, I still feel like it might be worth a look. I mean, do you think that there's any possibility that Janot with Johansson could get a look?
No. Just because every time John Hines does it, he does it for a game and then races right back to the third line, which, you know, so no, I have – no faith. I don't know. Maybe the play down the stretch will force that. I mean, just to kind of put things in perspective, and again, this is not to bang on anybody, but we have to talk about the results are the results. The stats are what they are. It's not even really an opinion. It's just a fact. I mean, when you go back to that St. Louis game that got away from them in the second period, Cunningham did have a goal in there. What was lost in the shuffle is Cunningham did have a goal. He had an assist in the first goal in that game, in the Cousins goal, which was happened to be the first goal of the game, and then things, like I said, went awry in the second period. Do you realize that was his first assist? He'd gone 38 games, so that was his first assist in 39 games. That's basically half of a season. An assist. I didn't say a primary. I mean, primary, secondary. Like, think about where they've been playing, and he'd gone 38 games without an assist. I mean, that's pretty alarming. I don't know how you're supposed to take that any other way than I get it. Last night was down on the fourth line, but a bulk of a season, most of the entire season, he hasn't been. He's been in the top six, and it took the 39th game to pick up an assist. So that just kind of goes to show you to put things in perspective of, you know, how things outside of the big guns, the guys that have been producing all year long. And these guys have been producing. They're just currently, you know, like Janot's had a great season. Trennan's had a great season. They're just not producing at the same clip. That well seems to have dried up, and this is just not the time for that. Everybody knows that. I mean, this is a critical stretch. They're going to get in. I don't think anybody fears that they're not going to get in. I think at this point, you do need to – I know Colorado's lost four in a row, and they just may be sleepwalking right now. I think if you had to pick, to me, you're picking Calgary, right? I don't think it's a good choice either way, but you're picking Calgary. I mean, I'll go back to last Tuesday. Nick Cousins came in to postgame into Patron Platinum Club with me after that shootout win over the Flames and said they're like similar teams. He liked playing. He said that was a fun game. They match up well. And so that's not my opinion. That's getting it from a player who's out there on the ice. I'll trust that over how I feel or any of us feel. So I guess if you're picking your poison, you're picking Calgary. So you need to stay in that top spot, that top wild card spot, you know, here in this week. You don't want to slide back to that last one in spot.
Darren McFarland from Darren Donica Chase on with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. So, Darren, to that point, I mean, you had a gift from San Jose last night taking on Vegas, and they tie it up with less than a second left. They win in a shootout. So, to your point, they're still in good shape to make the playoffs. I think everybody feels like they're going to make the playoffs. But UC Saros and the way that he has played lately, do you worry at all about the cumulative effect of the amount of starts that he's had? Are you worried about his play? Is it more the play in front of him? How would you answer where you think UC Saros is as they head into the final week of the season?
I understand the question, and everybody, probably a lot of people feel the same way. Like, huh, how do you – like, I was – honestly, I wasn't sure who they were going to start last night. I mean, every time you think, oh, this is a situation where you go one for one game, then the other for the other game, and so UC went Saturday, then, you know, but we've been retrained with John Hines, and I wasn't sure. Now, he went with David Rittich. I talked to UC Saros. He was the post-game guest last night, and I said, how do you feel right now? This is 79 games in the book. You didn't play last night. This is almost double the amount of starts you've ever had in your career, and, you know, I wasn't surprised. He just turned 27 last week. I remember 27. I think I had just gotten out of the zit phase. I'd gotten rid of all my acne, I think, by 27. My hair was a lot darker. And, you know, we had a lot of energy.
You had hair at 27? Wow.
What's that like? I had lots of hair. In fact, I had lots of hair. I had a party in the back, you know? Just saying. Maybe not at 27. I'd probably gotten rid of the party in the back. You know, that little mini mullet. Probably by 27. I was moved on past that. But, you know, he said he felt great. And I wasn't surprised by that. I mean, he's wired just like Pecorine, right? Anytime we ever talk to Pekka, they never wanted a night off. And you know, and if that's why you can't – sometimes you can't ask the player, because a player wired like Pekka or UC Saros, like, they want to be in net. They want to play 82 games. And it's just not physically possible, and it's just not smart, especially in today's game. I think it was a much-needed rest. I suspect if they can take care of business here tomorrow, you know, Thursday, but I hope it doesn't come down to the final game where the Arizona game actually has importance. But if it does, then obviously it may change the decision making. But if it doesn't, then there's another opportunity to sit him again and give him just a little bit more rest to get geared up for the first round.
Thanks to Darren McFarland for joining us here on Preds Insider. It's going to be a very interesting next three games for the Predators, and that all begins tomorrow night at Bridgestone Arena as they host the Calgary Flames, a potential first round of the playoffs preview coming up tomorrow at Bridgestone Arena. Puck drop at 7 o'clock, pregame at 6 o'clock here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We'll be back next week for a postseason edition of Preds Insiders, and hopefully the Preds will be a part of that. I have a feeling that they will be. You've been listening to Preds Insiders here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.